Welcome back again to The Stories Beneath, and my name is Margaret McKenna. I'm a visual artist and a visual storyteller because I believe that every image is a story and every story has an image. Vanity, green stud, and sorrow, dear Galair. Blessings of the summer solstice to you all. Greenstad in Irish means literally sunstop, which is our word for solstice. And of course, today is the longest day of the year, the 21st of June. And I'm sorry I'm a bit late with this podcast again, a little bit all over the place. But the good weather we've been having has had me out and about doing things and catching up on other things that we don't always have the chance to do in this country because our weather doesn't always be so good. And of course, the longest day of the year here in Ireland, especially where I am up in Cavan, and even if you go further in Donegal, it's very late. It's very bright till very late. I mean, at nighttime, midnight, we can still see a brightness on the northern horizon here. I'm not sure what time our actual night sunset is, around 10 o'clock or just before 10 o'clock tonight. So it's very late, and a long twilight, which is what I absolutely adore, is the long twilight. It's the only thing I miss so much in winter is when it just, besides the fact that days are short, the fact that when the sun goes down, it just gets dark, like kind of turning off light. Whereas in summertime, when the sun goes down, you can still have hours of brightness, literally just sort of fades into darkness gradually. And it's just so nice. Of course, this podcast, as usual, is about our place names to a point, and how they've been, I suppose, translated or badly, not even translated, but I suppose what you call it, transformed into something that doesn't make sense over the years because they've been anglicized, so they're not recognizable as anything. So we're going to go down to a place which is very much associated with this time of the year, and of course a goddess that is associated with it. We're going to jump around a couple of places, but mainly the one place, but places within that place, if that makes sense. The place I'm talking about is Lough Gur in Limerick. Lough Gur is it comes from the Irish loch, of course, being a lake. And Gur, well, there is actually, if you look it up, it's actually a little bit unknown as to where the word came from. In Irish, it's G-O-I-R. In English, it's G-U-R. Lough Gur. And Lough Gur, is from the Irish for G-O-R, actually, as a word without being attached to another word. I'm not going to the Irish grammar here, so it's a little bit complicated. But it can mean a heat or a warm. It's often used as a sort of a word in terms of the heat of an incubating egg, for example, like the incubation. However, it also could come from G-A-R, which can be to do with a proximity or closeness of something to something else. So it's on, we don't really know which, the Irish at the moment is spelled G-O-R, as it were, but it could be G-A-R. So in fact, they even say it could be G-E-A-R-R, which would be do with short, gyar, which is short, something that say, it's short, it's small, short in length. So there's several meanings that could be on this lake. However, there's no denying, no matter what meanings are on it, that it is an amazing place. It is literally one of the most important ancient sites in Ireland. It has, from Neolithic right through to sort of medieval times, there is an abundance of monuments and dwelling places in this area. It is just absolutely amazing. And there's a visitor site there you can visit as well, which has information about it. I haven't been there for years. I was there when the kids were small, and it's high time I went back down again, down the country to have a look at it. It's only about 20 minutes from Limerick City, so well worth the visit if you're in that area. There's a particular goddess that we have associated with this area, and I'm going to talk a little bit about her first before I get into other aspects. And I'm going to be jumping around a little bit, a few little people I want to talk about in terms of that general area, and some I will go into a little bit more than others. So Áine herself, well, she is one of the most important goddesses or gods in our pantheon of gods in our Irish mythology. Her name is meant to mean delight, pleasure, sometimes referred to as melody. She was referred to in the 10th century Sun as Cormac, as the mother of gods. So she really has an outstanding place as being one of the most most powerful, the most identifiable as a sovereign goddess In Ireland. She's identified with looking after agriculture, as a few other goddesses are, because agriculture, of course, was how people lived, still do in many cases in Ireland, as a way of life. But certainly in ancient times, really, that's all they would have had to live on was their agriculture, be it crops or animals, depending on the time they lived in. But certainly she was also a goddess of prosperity, of plenty. So again, harvesting, although this would have been, and also of summer, so it would have been growth. This is a time when everything is growing in the fields, which is before the harvest time, and everything is, hopefully the sun is shining, the long days, and this is when everything is coming, becoming ripe and ready to harvest in not too distant future. So she is the person or the goddess associated with this time. She was meant to be either the daughter of Eigamo or indeed Monaman MacAleir, the sea god, depending in the different versions of it. She was certainly a member of the Tuatha De Danann, this mythical, magical race that has, from which most of our gods came from. In fact, I think nearly all. I mean, I know Lu was a little bit of a mixture, but really most of the goddesses are mainly come from that era of that race of people. Except perhaps the Cailleach. Now there's a question. The Cailleach is the oldest of the sovereign deities. She's really before time, really, creator goddess, I suppose you could say. But certainly Eru, for example, Morrigan, Dagda, all of these have this link to the Tuatha De Danann. And of course Anya is no exception. And she is a shapeshifter. Again, the shapeshifting was very common. We have, say, the Morrigan turning into a raven, a crow, and a wolf sometimes. Cailleach was often a hare, he appears as a hare. And of course we have Anya, her main transformation animal, as it were, was a red mare. But of course she's associated with the sun, associated with this time of the year, with the middle of the solstice time. And in Lough Gur, she is very much associated with this area in particular, but her name is actually, you see it around different places of the country. For example, in Lough Gur, which we'll get to in a second, we have Knockaney Hill. We have Tubberania in Tyrone and Lissan in Derry. Tubberania in Tyrone means the Well of Anya. Lissania in Derry is the fort of Anya. And then, of course, back down to Limerick, which has a particular association with her, we have Knockaney Hill, which, of course, is Cnuch Anya, which actually means the Hill of Anya. Indeed, at this, but it's right near Lough Gur. So Lough Gur is this, let's say, I'll just go back to Lough Gur for a second, because Cnuch Anya is situated very near it. It's now a dragon mouth shape. That's what they call it, of this lake. It's shaped like a bit like a dragon mouth. But initially it would have been a full circular lake, but drainage schemes in the 1840s meant that it has now lost its shape. And what was a hill of Knock Doon, which is Cnuch Doon, the hill of the fort, it is now, as part of the eastern side of the lake, it would have been like a big island in the lake originally. So even still, it is still a very important place for so many items. And of course, it's why it actually so. The reason it also associates with Anya, for example, is Knockaney Hill, or Cnuch Anya Hill, which is very nearby. In older times, men would actually light bunches of straw and make a procession up the hill on this day, at this time of the year. And then what they would also do is they would run through their crops with the straw, as it were, asking, and between our animals, to ask for the protection of Anya, because she was supposed to protect the animals, protect the fields, and make sure that the harvest would be plentiful in the coming week months. Now, of course, she's also got another side to her, though, Anya, because she, again, the thing about the Irish goddesses and gods, they were kind of vulnerable as well as being powerful. For example, we have the story of her with Alil Ullam. And Alil was a king of, a semi-mythical king of Munster. And at one time it is said that his crops were failing. The people were starving, and he became very stressed over this. And he was not sure what to do. But one of his druids said that Anya, the goddess Anya, could help him. And he directed him to go to Cnuth Anya. And so he did. And asked for her protection. However, when he saw her and he saw her beauty, he became overwhelmed by her beauty. And he did not behaved in a very, very violent manner and forced himself upon her. But of course, Anya was powerful, this is the thing about these ancient goddesses. They had a vulnerability, or indeed gods, to say they could be killed, they could be injured, they could be harmed. So she was obviously assaulted by him. And she took her revenge, and her revenge was that she bit his ear. And of course, bit off his ear, in fact, in the process, which I'm sure he well deserved, to say the least. But anyway, by her doing this, it was actually much more than just losing the ear. The consequences for him was that he could no longer stay a king, because in ancient Ireland, if you had any unfortunate, they were not very a right way of doing things, I suppose, at all, was that if you had any deformity in any case, if there was anything wrong with your body, if something you had lost a limb and something seemed to be, if there was something that was not right about your body, if there was if you had a mishap even, if you were born like it, if you actually had an accident, if something in their eyes was not right about your physical appearance, you were no longer fit to be king. Which, of course, nowadays we would say that was completely wrong, and obviously was completely wrong. But in this case, it meant that he was no longer fit to be king, and so she got her revenge on him. Interestingly enough, she's actually also associated with an actual historical figure, a real historical figure, and that is Garóid Iarla, or Garrett Fitzgerald, and I'm not talking about the Taoiseach of Ireland back in the sort of 80s, 90s. Who was also called Garrett Fitzgerald, but Garóid Iarla, or Garrett Fitz, he was the Earl of Desmond. The Fitzgeralds were a Norman family, and a very powerful Norman family that ruled in Munster for quite some time. But the early earls, which one of them was being Garóid, or Garrett in English, he actually was quite an Irish version of these earls, because we learned in the school, I remember, about the Normans, that many of the Normans became more Irish than the Irish themselves. So we had the initial Norman invasion, which they were the Norman French, kind of very much Norman French rather than Norman sort of English, like we had in England. They were the Norman French, like in Battle of Hastings, Battle of Hastings, William the Conqueror and all that. And then we had in Ireland, we had Strongbow coming across as well. So these were very Norman French. So when they came to Ireland initially, they settled into a very, very Gaelic background, because everybody spoke Irish, everybody lived by the Brehon laws, a very different type of system than would have been in France or indeed in England. So some of the families adopted the Irish system, and Garóid Iarla was one of them. And even though he was brought to England, to be brought up in England and educated in England, and his father, though, had died quite soon after, so he came back to Ireland. And he was given land by the English, now English king, because this is 200 years after the Normans arrived initially, remember, in Ireland. So it was now the English king gave him lands. It was only on condition that he married a particular, the one of the Ormond family, who were quite loyal to the king, and who would give up his Irish ways. But he did marry her, but he did not give up his Irish ways, and he was very much into Irish poetry and learning. So the thing about him is that it was said, according to legend, that he was the son of Anya, that Anya and his father, Maurice Fitzgerald, had come together and had Garóid, and that he was a bit of a sorcerer, and he had these magical powers. Now, he is known to have got into trouble with various families at different stages, and indeed he was actually imprisoned and wrote poetry in Irish, one of them being Maragadair Ugh Rish Namar Manav, which means speak not ill of womankind, which is interesting. So he was a poet, and he was very much on the side of being a very Gaelic type lord. Interestingly enough, it said he disappeared in the year 1398. No record of him. He would have been in his early 60s. maybe he died, we don't know. But of course, the fact that he disappeared made more legends about him. And the fact that he was associated with Anya was really kind of handy for his family, because legends like that made his family quite important. It gave him a sort of authenticity amongst the Irish people. But it's said that Garrod himself sleeps beneath a cave, or sleeps in a cave beneath Loch Gur. And in this cave, he has a white horse that's shod with silver shoes. And there's two versions of the story. And one is that every 7 years, or the other version is when Ireland is in need of kind of help, that he will come and out of his cave on this white horse with a band of fairies behind him. And he has to do this until the horse's shoes are worn away. So there you go. And interestingly enough, the fact that he's got the fairy kingdom behind him associates with Anya as well, because she is also the queen of the fairies, one of the queen of the fairies, which is another interesting sort of feather in her cap, as it were, because I suppose being associated with this underworld and the world of the Tuatha De Danann gives her that extra association with the fairy world. So in Loch Gur itself, getting back to the actual real physical place, there is an amazing amount of places to see. Probably the most important one is it's one of the most outstanding places, is Grange Stone Circle. It's the biggest stone circle in Ireland and creates a wonderful, literally, stone circle, a proper stone circle, because it's almost a continuous line of stones right around. And it's also associated, there will be people down there tonight, we can be sure, celebrating the summer solstice. There is say that on the summer solstice, the entranceway is lit up by the early morning sun into the entrance stones into the circle itself. There's also meant to be alignments to certain stones at other times of the year, for example, like Samhain, and sometimes say the equinox. So there's quite a few alignments going on there, which is quite interesting, because remember, this, because it's a continuous circle, there will be some stones that will light up, and maybe more important stones or stones that are considered to be more outstanding that will light up at certain times of the year. But there's quite a lot of debate about that, and I'm not going into that now, because I've actually read a bit about it, and there seems to be different versions of which stones light up at which time. But certainly it is very definitely associated with the summer solstice. Although again, as the academics would debate about that, but the sunlight does come in the morning time through the entrance, between the entrance stones. There's also an interesting stone there, which is quite an interesting one. Just checking to see, I had a couple of notes written down here. I'm just trying to see what it was. Oh yes, oh, just before I go to that. Yes, in Loch Gur itself, we also have the Wedge Tombs, we have Cran Oaks, there's the Black Castle, there's also another castle as well, which is the Bouchier Castle. So that we've got, some of them are not all open to the public, but we have some of them ruined, some of them are in better condition than others. There's also Garrett Island out there, again to do with Garrett Fitzgerald or Garrod Irla. There's also rumoured that there was a kind of an Atlantis under Loch Gur, a type of a mini version of it. We also have evidence of the bones of Irish elk in the areas, as if the people had hunted them and ate them. The ancient Irish elk, which is a massive, massive deer. I've seen the skeleton of one in the Natural History Museum, and it was an absolutely huge specimen. It's now long, long gone from our shores, unfortunately. But so it is really, I definitely would recommend going down to Loch Gur. I have to get down there again. And so now, you know, it's associated, say, with Anya, associated with the real character of Garrett Fitzgerald, Garrod Irla, who lives underneath. And also another interesting character. And this guy is called Crom Dubh. And Crom means twisted, and Dubh is black. So it's twisted or bent, black. And meaning that he was the bent, and he was twisted over, and he was black. And they say the reason this is an interesting one, because there's a little bit of speculation on my own behalf, in a sense. He's actually, in some version, he's credited as being the first person to bring wheat into Ireland. That he is, and the reason why he's bent over is because he's carrying a big lot of wheat. Now, I have to check this out a bit more, but from what I'm remembering is that when the very earlier farmers came to Ireland, a lot of them, the really early people in the Burn, for example, which is just beside Limerick, would have been very dark skinned people. So is this the case? Is this the case that he was one of these very dark skinned people who had who was carrying the wheat, bringing wheat to Ireland? And, you know, that he was kind of symbolic. He wasn't an actual person. He was a symbol of these people who carried the wheat, and that they were literally bent over. They may be seen being bent over from carrying their loads, just a thought. Certainly he's also connected to, what's the other fella's name? Crom Cruach, who is another rather darker side of our pantheon of gods. But certainly there's an interesting story about Crom Dubh. Oh yeah, he has a stone. There's a Crom, the Ranach Crom Dubh is one of the biggest stone in the Grange Circle. That's what I'm trying to get at. I knew there was a reason why I was talking about this. I couldn't remember what it was for a second. Sorry, don't mind me. I'm getting a bit distracted here by my own thoughts. Ranach is like the stone, divisions. It's the division, it's the stone, like it's division stone of Crom. Stone of divisions, kind of like you have a stone of divisions in named of Crom Cruach, of sorry, of Crom Dubh, I mean, and it's the biggest one. And it's actually flowers and that left there for him later in the year at Lunasa. So there was a kind of devotion to him. It's a Crom Dubh. He was remembered in our folklore. Perhaps as originally as being the bringer of wheat to the land, and this one of the stones beside him is dedicated to Aetna, who was the corn child, and she was meant to be the fairy mistress to Crom Dubh. So this is celebrated later on in around Lunasa, when flowers and garlands of flowers are put a lot on those stones. There's a little story about him and St. Patrick, actually, Crom Dubh. It's certainly with Crom Cruach there is. But Crom Dubh himself, in the Dinshanachas, Book of Dinshanachas, about in the 12th century, there's meant to be that he died, and Cianach of Abo, St. Cianach, he is meant to have seen all these demons flying past. And he asked, well, why are the demons going past? And somebody said, well, it's because Crom Dubh has died and they're collecting his soul. But then, sure, while the demons went back the other way, and they were kind of limping past, and he said, what's the story with these demons, they're all limping? He said, oh, because St. Patrick came along, and St. Patrick got there in time for the demons, and he struck down the demons, because he said that actually Crom Dubh, even though he was a pagan or whatever, he had done more good deeds, and his good deeds had outweighed his bad deeds, and therefore he had sent the demons packing, which is rather interesting. Now, on the other hand, I might talk about this other lad another time more in detail, but just a little kind of a dip into him is Crom Cruach, which is not really connected with this at all, but just that he was connected to Crom Dubh. There may be a connection. There's a kind of a link, not completely. It's a little maybe a bit tenuous, but Crom Cruach was a totally different character. He was connected to Cavan, where I am actually, in my Schlecht, which is the plane of prostration. Ignore my wonderful pronunciation there. And he had a rather dark kind of an image. There was a kind of cult of him in early Christian times, actually. And actually, I think he's connected more to Bow Island, which I might talk about there. I won't go into him too much, but I know he was struck, meant to, that cult was kind of sort of put down by Patrick. It's supposed to be St. Patrick, and it was quite meant to be a little bit the darker side, to leaning towards sacrifice and that human sacrifice, which is not something we hear too much about in our mythology. So he had a little bit of that element going on, but I'll talk about him another day. So just really to end really with the fact that this time of the year, as I say, it really is dedicated to Aine. She is the main goddess of this time, associated with so many parts of the country really. But in particular, if anyone's living in the Limerick area, they will often have heard of Aine in connection to her being in the landscape. Monchan Magan, in his latest book, for example, said she's in the landscape, that the hill is her mind and the lake was like the room. And that is the lake of Lochgar. And when you think about it, this goes back, you're talking 4000 BCE. We're talking back to the really early Neolithic times. At least certainly 5,500 years anyway, at least going back into the very midst of civilization, as it were, the very midst of the beginnings of our sort of Irish identity, I suppose, that has changed so much and been added to by so many peoples who have come over the centuries and the millennia indeed. So the fact that she's associated with this place makes it particularly special, I think. A place where people lived, where so many, even 4,000 shards of pottery have been found there. So people lived and died, and they obviously used the elk at some stage. They grew their crops, probably their wheat in that part of the country they may have. And she was there protecting them, looking out for them, making sure that they were fed, making sure that they had plenty and prosperity. And I suppose on that note, I will leave you, and I hope you had enjoyed that little collection of rather backwards and forward stories, because it's so many little bits to cover and I was jumping around a little bit as usual, says you. I'm sure it's no different than ever. And I have the picture I have going to put up, actually, in association with this. It will be on my website, celticmyths.ie. Or if you want to go through, I must say my main website is margaretmckenna.ie, and that's my general artwork with a tab to the Celtic Myths artwork. But it also has blogs that I've done about places I've gone around Ireland and of course a link to here as well. But you've got some of the blogs of different places I've visited, so you might be interested in that on the margaretmckenna.ie one. And the picture I'm going to put up, it will be on my website very soon. I just did it yesterday, actually. I got it completed yesterday, and it's my another version I have of the goddess Anya rising up from the stone circle at Grange, or similar type of stone circle, as being the queen of the fairies. So, and tonight now, I'm hoping in about an hour and a bit maybe to head up to Loch Crew and to watch the sunset go down over another ancient place right beside me, just over where I'm looking at the moment. If I wasn't in a tree, it was in the way, I'd see it. But if I stand at my gates, I can see Loch Crew. And that's where I'm hoping to head very shortly. So thank you so much. Go to Mila Mila Mahagwiv. And I hope you enjoyed it. And I'll see you next time. Bye now.